trying to change the world here, people.
Oh, really?
Facebooking and the tweeting and the Instagramming, all that would not exist without our understanding of science.
So it's amazing that you took that as an insult.
You mean true for you is different from true for anybody else?
Yeah, absolutely,
be true for
because
you.
I can't
think either got to be true or not.
I can't, no. Good evening, people of Internetlandia. Welcome to O'Reilly Radio Show 69 for Friday, July 31st, 2015, where we dismantle the current events for your edutainment through mostly rational conversations that make you go, oh, really? I'm your host, Andy Gowan, with my usual suspect, Michael.
Why, hello there.
Hello. And welcome to this Blue Moon edition, only because, well, a blue moon, at least according to the modern definition of the term, has nothing to do with color. It simply means the second full moon in the same calendar month. And it just squeaked in here at the 31st. Sweet. But, you know, these are just some more of those lovely coincidences like things that happen on show 69. Not that that's going to mean a darn thing for us here.
No, not really.
Alrighty. We did not have any errata from last week, but we do make mistakes. Trust me, we're very human. If you find a mistake, and you will, please pause the podcast and send us a note. OReillyRadioPodcast@gmail.com. That's OReillyRadioPodcast. @gmail.com. Or you can phone it in, 470-222-O-REILLY, O-R-L-Y, or that's a 6759. Alrighty, let's see here. What have we got? Big things that happened this week. Windows 10! Windows 10! This many. Because apparently they forgot that there was a 9 and went straight to 10, but that's okay. There's reasons for that, but mostly 10, I think, looks better. Now, If you are in the Google universe, like many of us are, and you've been kind of creeped out about how they read your Gmail to, you know, scrape things out and then give you advertisements based on that information, or customize your search history, or tell, or ask you whether or not you're going to that favorite place that you always go to, and by the way, there's a 15-minute traffic delay, things like that. then Windows 10 is going to feel right at home because that's what they're doing in there too. They're adding in a lot of features. This past tense, they've already done it. They've added in a lot of these features that will essentially track your movements and what you do to provide you a better experience. They have bundled in, something called Cortana, which if you have a Windows phone or have played the Halo series, then you know what Cortana is. And basically it's similar to that Alexa device. Oh good, she's not listening. That I was previewing on previous shows where it's your own little personal assistant or it's like the OK Google Now thing.
It's nearly as effective as OK Google Now or even
it isn't because you haven't experienced it inside the Windows ecosystem. Because all those things are, you know, the OK Google experience is very effective on the Google platform because it has all the hooks into all of your information. So if you then extrapolate that out, you know, same thing with Siri. Siri has all the information on you because it's in your phone. It's right there. It is your personal assistant. If you're in you got the Windows phone, Cortana, it looks at all of your stuff because it's got everything there. So again, now it's going to be on your desktop everywhere. Well, we'll see how that works out. But if you don't like all the spying with the stuff and the NSA and all that garbage, then Boy Genius Report, BGR.com, has come up with how to opt out of those settings. And apparently there's about 13 different windows and tabs that you have to go through and uncheck things.
Of course there are.
I welcome our evil robot overlords with open arms, and I will
really, if they want to watch us, they're gonna find a way.
Yeah, it really
fighting it is really your.
If you disable things like location services, if you disable the scraping of the email for, you know, bits and pieces, then what you're doing is you're really robbing yourself of the full experience where they're going to help you and make it more to your liking, more tailored to your experience. And then you're going to have those little, you know, happy moments. Well, you're not going to have any of those happy moments if you just block all their ways of figuring out what you actually want. So if you like to get those Viagra ads all the time, even though you're a woman, then, you know, hey, go ahead. But,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, because you're still going to get random advertisements and things. It's just not going to be for stuff you give a shit about.
Right. They're going to be very random. If you'd like them to be a little more tailored to you, then maybe you want to go ahead and give it a shot. But otherwise, privacy has become such a concern that they've put in a lot of things to say, delete all my information, please. And as long as you're not an Ashley Madison customer, they'll do it. Oh, wait, that's a callback. Yeah, a little callback from last week there. Okay. All right, and let's say I'm moving right along. Boy Scouts vote to end the ban on gay adult scout leaders.
Good job, Boy Scouts.
Finally. They had already done away with the ban on both non-believing, you know, atheist or secular scouts, and also gay scouts, but they had still had that restriction in there for the adult leadership. Republican presidential hopeful Ben Carson claims President Obama and the Democrats want to eliminate black people with Planned Parenthood. Yep.
This is what we refer to as classic misdirection. They hate Planned Parenthood because they hate people using contraceptives and abortion because they want women to do nothing but pump out babies. Right. So they're going to try to make the bad guy.
They're also insinuating that there's a huge exorbitant population of black people that are being aborted. That's the only reason that Planned Parenthood exists is for abortions, obviously, of course. It couldn't be that that's actually only like maybe under 20% of everything that they do. The rest is just family planning.
3%.
3%.
The most recent figure that I've seen that had any kind of legitimacy was 3% of their services are actually abortions. Most of the time they actually try to talk you out of it because it has huge health implications.
It does.
Yes.
Be informed. But, well, that doesn't fit the narrative, Mike.
No.
So.
Of course not.
So, of course, they're going to continue on with this rhetoric. And Ben Carson, who is black, is also claiming that President Obama, who is black, is trying to eliminate all black people.
Which just, I mean, they don't make sense with a lot of the things they say, but that's just a new category of what the hell are you talking about?
Would this be a case of the pot calling the kettle black? Perhaps.
But I'm bummed.
Hey, I'll be here all night, folks. Try the veal. Republican presidential hopeful Mike Huckabee won't rule out using federal troops to stop abortions. The hits just keep on coming, people.
Well, you know, first they'd have to pull them out of the Middle East. Hey-o!
Hey, that'd be fantastic. Okay, let's see.
Troops would be home then.
At least they'd have something to do stateside. Okay.
Right?
Appeals court rules pharmacists cannot deny medicine because of religious beliefs.
About time.
In your face. Do your job. That's all we're asking.
Yeah. Just do your job.
If you have a problem with doing your job, then maybe you're in the wrong job. Just saying. And of course we say just saying because telling somebody that they're an idiot to their face is not politically correct or socially acceptable.
But since when do we care about being socially acceptable or politically correct? You're an idiot.
There you go. The state of Georgia, speaking of idiots, sues Carl Malmud for copyright infringement for publishing the state's own laws.
Well, I looked into this under more detail because I wanted to know what the hell is going on. Because anything with laws involved is immediately more complicated. What Georgia does, what every state is supposed to do,
yes,
is make the laws in the books publicly available.
Right.
What they don't do is they don't publish the annotated laws with all of the case history and all of that stuff, which is more important than just the laws on the books.
Right, because it's the interpretation of the law.
Because that has been, you know, tried and tested through the legal system and has been changed by judgments from the judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the judiciary's job in that whole three-part government we were taught about in school.
The judicial system.
Yes. So those laws are the important ones. And what Georgia is doing is they are charging ridiculous amounts of money for you to get a hold of the actual laws.
Oh,
so you can know.
But get this.
Actually what matters.
But they're not. They have outsourced it to another company. Because if you go through several chutes and ladders and hoops and fireball and brimstone and you face the person in the basement, you know, for all the information, you can get all these for free. But you gotta work for it.
You gotta work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to penetrate the bureaucracy,
which is what they
don't want you to do.
Exactly, which is what he did. He got them for free.
So he did that.
He did
that. And then he just published them.
And the problem is, the state of Georgia gives all this information freely to a company, which then charges those exorbitant fees to have them basically bound and printed and handed to you for something ridiculous. Like it was like $300 a rule or something. You know,
it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars. They make bank off of this. But even the greed is not.
Yeah.
You know, we always say follow the money, especially you, Andy.
I do.
But I've started saying it too. But so we say that. But this is really not what this is about. This is about the state not wanting you to know the laws that you're under so that they can blindside you with them, so that you stay ignorant, so they can keep making unfair legal judgments over you.
Well, it's...
Because let's remember, this is a red state, and they don't give a damn about your civil rights.
Well, that's true. They would well, the problem that I have with this is of course, we're brought up to know that ignorance of the law is no excuse for not knowing the law, for breaking the law.
Yeah.
However, they have created this mass bureaucracy, you know, and fenced it off so that the normal plebeians cannot access it in any way, shape, or form. So then we have to pay our attorneys once we've been locked up so that they can then interpret it for us and say, yeah, you broke the law. No, you didn't know about it, but, well, too bad. But what this really does is, because I look at the state as being soulless and generally corruptible anyway. But which means that there's an awful lot of apathy. They don't care, really. So at the end of the day, I think that it's a real good chance that the company that is making the bank off of selling this stuff went over to the state and said, hey, this Carl Malmont guy, he's infringing on our business, on our legitimate business operations over here. Why don't you go take care of him for us, eh?
I love the 1920s voice. That's just beautiful. Which, again, this is classic red state because we all know they are bought and paid for by businesses. They are such puppets of big business. They might as well just sit up there on the stage with the businessman with his hand up their ass, puppeting what they say. I mean, seriously, it's that bad.
It is pretty bad. And, you know, it's so bad that there's this article, which is several pages of very small letters, and then another article that continues on with more analysis, and that's all over at techdirt.com. Now, you can find that link and all the links to all these stories out at our webpage at oreillyradio.com, show 69. Now, Apple, Microsoft, Google, and other U.S. firms have committed $140 billion to address climate change. How's that for living it up to the private enterprise? This is like a libertarian's dream.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, look at situations like this, because this is not the first time that something like this has happened. It's just the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big number.
Yeah, executives from 13 major U.S. corporations are due to announce the investment at the White House on July 27th in the presence of Secretary of State John Kerry and top administration officials. This is essentially... they're looking to shrink their carbon footprints. So they're not really looking to save the world, but looking to make themselves look better in said world.
But even so, regardless of why they're doing it, they're still doing it.
Yeah, it's in the right direction.
I don't believe for a second that any of them are doing this for altruistic reasons. They're doing it to look good.
Right.
But if their business stops polluting the environment because they want the good press, it still stops polluting the environment. So
right.
That's a net gain for everybody.
Yes, and let that be a lesson to everyone. Corporations don't have goodwill. You have to do the carrot and stick thing to get them to go where you want them to go.
But it's just this is one of those things that, you know, I don't get about about the red side of American politics. They want the free market to rule all and all that nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the free market, by their actions, is saying things like, we believe in global warming. Global warming is a thing, and we're going to fight it. No, we're not doing it because it's the right thing to do. We're doing it because the people want us to do it, and therefore we're going to make more money. But we're still doing it. We're still acknowledging mm-hmm. that it is a thing and it is true. And yet, the Republican hardline is still, global warming is not true. Rabble, rabble, rabble. You're a moron.
Later this week, U.S. EPA is expected to announce final regulations. I don't know if this has happened yet, that aim to reduce carbon emissions from American power plants by 30% over 2005 levels by 2030. I think that really, that's really a long time. But I think they could go faster, but you know, at least they've given them that amount of time. So there should be less whining on the other side of the fence. Less whining.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say whether or not they could go faster because it depends on their current infrastructure, and which we don't know. And
yeah.
While we do have some pretty effective green methods, converting to them is not always easy.
Yeah. You know. Speaking of global warming, a city in Iran has hit suffocating heat index levels of 165 degrees.
Dear Lord.
165. This is in Bandar Mashara. I think I did okay there. With a population of 110,000 as of 2010, and the air felt like 165 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 74 degrees Celsius, factoring in for humidity. Although there are no official records of heat indices, this is the second highest level we have ever seen reported. So to achieve today's astronomical heat index of 165, Bandar Mashar's actual air temperature registered at 115 degrees, 46 Celsius, with an astonishing dew point of 90 or 32 C. I don't know why anyone would want to live there. And
well, it's like, why would anyone want to live in Tornado Alley? You live in Tornado Alley.
Well, it's fine when there are no tornadoes. Maybe that's the same reason.
But when the place you live in is named for something that could destroy you.
Well.
So hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at least out in the desert, it's just a passive destruction. It's just hot. It's the desert.
To give people
ways to deal with that.
To give people a little context here, if you've ever been in Houston, that's kind of what we're dealing with here, because this city is on the very north tip of the Persian Gulf in Iran, along that border to Iraq and Kuwait. So it's right in there along the Persian Gulf, probably about 50 miles in. And it's really, really hot there. No thank you. No thank you. I have no desire to go out to the desert.
All right.
It's hot. What's the weather today? It's hot. Medicare turned 50 years old Thursday. And of course, the Republicans would like to kill it.
Of course they would.
Yeah.
That's not news.
No, not really. There is a video that I've posted here to go along with this, about Robert Reich. He talks about, you know, how important Medicare has been and that it needs to be expanded, not contracted or done away with, for obvious reasons. Like if you like people living long, you know, like your relatives, you know, the ones that have aged out of certain systems and, you know, retirees. Yeah, it's kind of an important thing. And, you know, if we do away with it now, we are cutting our own nose off, because eventually we're going to get old too, people. Wouldn't you like to have that social safety net there to fall into as you get older? I mean, it seems logical, but go figure.
I mean, purely devil's advocate here, the argument can be made that we need to care less about the health of old people because they're on their way out. And the less population, the more people die, the less population stress there is on the planet. But
that's
just mean.
That's so callous. Yeah.
It is. It's callous and heartless. And while I do believe that depending on some of the choices that some of the powers that be make, we may come to that point in our society where we seriously have to consider those kinds of pressures. I don't think we're there yet.
Well, that would be assisted suicide.
Yeah.
Or even mandatory suicide.
Yeah.
You know, talk about death panels. There you
like,
go.
Like Logan's Run style shit. You,
exactly.
You get
yes. No. Definitely
but
Logan's
we're
Run.
We're not there yet.
No.
Nowhere.
Well, with Logan's Run, I think it was 35. I have to watch that. Watch
it was 30.
That. Yeah. So all these young people.
The only reason I remember that it was 30 is because Fallout New Vegas had a reference to it. Because when you had all the DLC installed, the level cap was 50, and if you got the Logan's Run perk, you only leveled to 30, but you had like all these bonuses, but you couldn't level any higher than 30. So.
It was
a funny reference that makes me remember.
Very good, very good. All right. Yes. AP history caves to conservatives, the AP being advanced placement, and will downplay slavery and focus on American exceptionalism.
What does that even mean?
It means that we're better than the rest of the world, and here's why.
Oh, which we're not.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
No, yeah, okay. Let's see.
It's not okay.
Ben Carson, an actual Republican presidential candidate, went even further, saying, "I'm a little shocked, quite frankly, looking at the AP course in American history that's being taught in high schools across our country right now. There's only two paragraphs in there about George Washington. George Washington, believe it or not. Little or nothing about Martin Luther King, a whole section of slavery and how evil we are, a whole section about Japanese internment camps, a whole section about how we wiped out American Indians with no mercy. I mean, I think most people, when they finish that course, they'd be ready to sign up for ISIS."
Okay. Again, I'm going to devil's advocate here a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because honestly, I do, he's got, in a very, very small concession here, I'm going to say he does have a point. Because I took AP history.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like it. Because, well, one, I knew more than they taught because I read. And two, because, yes, they focus on all the bad things that have happened in America. And a lot of good things have happened in America, too. And it is easy to lose sight of that because, especially for people like us, what we do, mm-hmm. we want to highlight the bad because this is bad and we need to fix it. And that's important. But it is also important to remember the good things that we have done and the victories we have achieved. Like, you know, I was on Tumblr today.
As you are.
This could be a good story because it starts with I was on Tumblr today. And
as one is these days, yes.
My brother reposted something. It was talking about the original poster was talking about how the American military has finally done away with the policy that openly transgendered individuals are banned.
Yeah.
That policy is gone now.
Yes.
You can be openly transgender in the military, and there is nothing they can do about it. That is an important social justice victory.
Absolutely.
And it was immediately followed by this incredibly inflammatory post by this complete jerkwad.
I'm shocked.
About how terrible American imperialism is and how horrible, what a horrible human being you have to be in the military.
Wow.
To which
really?
I responded, to which I had to respond by slapping him in the face with his own ignorance. It's like, okay, let's assume that your perfect freedom utopia we actually get as close as possible to that here in America. Let's assume we do that.
Okay.
We're still going to need a goddamn military because the world ain't perfect and someone out there is going to want to kill us and take our stuff simply because they can.
Yes.
Your pretentious misguided personal politics don't matter when someone's putting a bullet through your brain.
Yeah, as long as there is animosity, we have to have some sort of, you know, protective service.
Yeah. Yes,
certainly.
You're still going to need a military.
Yeah.
So it is important, therefore, that we celebrate this social justice victory in our military because we want it to be the best it can be.
And representative of the people that it supports.
Exactly. So this thing about, you know, AP history is, yes, it focuses on all the bad stuff and doesn't talk about any of the good things we've done. And I didn't like that because
yeah.
it should – because – any history course should be an honest representation of what has happened in this country. Yes, slavery happened and it was terrible. Yes, we treated the Indians horribly. The British started it and then we continued it because we were dumb.
Because we were technically British. You know.
Well, but yes, bad things have happened and we did them.
Yeah.
And we should never forget that.
Now
we need to remember the good things we've done.
Certainly.
However,
there's not enough time
in
the day.
That's not what this guy is doing.
No.
This guy wants to sweep it all under the rug and pretend it never happened. And that is also a load of bullshit.
Yes. Yeah. Now, somehow we need to balance this. But I think what I've seen is, for some reason, I had a guidance counselor that did not really like me. And when I signed up for AP History, he said no. And instead put me in Honors History, which was a joke. But you know what? What you're saying was in your class, not in mine. Mine was already whitewashed.
Yeah.
Which is why it was insanely boring for me. But it was whitewashed for the lower level. I mean, it was still honors, so it was decent. There was a lot of content there, and boy, there's a lot of content in American history. In any history. It is everything that happened yesterday. You know? To go through it, it takes some time. So you can only get the highlight reel after all. So yeah. It's what are you going to highlight? You know, where are you going to put that spotlight kind of thing? But I felt like they had missed over a lot of things already. There was nothing on our destruction, decimation of the indigenous people here at all. I guess they assumed that we already got that through some other social studies class earlier on, which very well may be the case.
Yeah.
So I think it's with Common Core, which is, you know, that big thing that we all have to deal with now, if your parents are.
We've already gone over that.
Yeah, but you know, Common Core, it is more of a holistic approach looking from the very beginning all the way through. Now, if they would stop making changes and actually let it go all the way through, we'll know whether or not it has an effect. Instead of doing a knee-jerk change every time the administration changes. You know, if we can at least keep it going, we can make it work.
Yeah.
You know, we can live within that system. So hopefully the things that are being built upon, because that is what it's designed to do. Thankfully, my girls are getting in just at the time when it's starting. So they'll have that build, and they won't be, you know, completely lost like the older kids.
Yeah.
And the parents that have to support them.
In the middle of the system while it's changing.
Right. So hopefully what we see is it's actually going to be an iterative process in learning, which is what it should be. It should be a building block kind of thing.
And anything, really, when you're talking about education, should be an inherently iterative process.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, science. I'm going to keep coming back to science because science is important, and anyone who says otherwise is lying to you. Science is an iterative process.
It is.
You learn about the lever first.
Right. Simple machines.
You learn about friction and
inclined planes.
Force and movement on inclined planes and all that. And then you build up to nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
And I've done that. And if you don't do it that way, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So why don't we teach history that way?
You got to know the fundamentals. Yeah. You got to build up.
Right?
Yeah. So definitely the history and that includes all the mythologies too, because they made up the people that made history. So you got to get the whole thing. But apparently we just don't have time for that. So hopefully we will.
Covering all of human history, which would be the ideal, is impossible.
That's a little daunting. A little daunting, yeah.
We're going to get off into, you know, speculative fiction here for a second. But there is a thing in Civilization Beyond Earth, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Plug.
It's about human society going out and colonizing other worlds. There is a secret project, a super wonder building that you can make. It's called Deep Memory. And the concept of this is that computers have gotten so advanced that they can hold all of human history, or at least all of human history that has managed to survive in recorded form up to that point.
Okay.
And what deep memory can do is you literally plug into it, because at that point, why won't we be able to plug our brains into computers?
Direct neural interface, and
you can experience history in the first person with the cultural cipher overlaid onto your brain. So you can go watch Shakespeare at the Globe Theater and hear it in the language of the time and understand all the jokes that were made that we don't get because we're not from then, and you know, experience history as if you are part of it. And this concept, this thing that I want to see happen.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Will make teaching history so easy.
Yeah, eventually we need the Matrix, really.
Yeah, and once we get to that point, we will stop having this problem of, you know, forgetting where we came from. Who are you that do not know your history? You know, we won't be those people anymore. And I think that kind of thing is going to make some real positive cultural impact. And we need to start doing that now in whatever way we can.
Yeah, somehow. Just, I want people to be more interested in the past so that they are not doomed to make the same mistakes in the future. You know, and I think that's why we focus on all the negatives, so that we don't repeat them.
Yeah.
So that we know the pitfalls, so that we can learn from the mistakes of others, so that we are not trapped by them.
And another important point here that this jerk, very clearly illustrates is anyone who tries to cover up bad things they've done wants mm-hmm. you to forget about them so they can do them to you again.
Yeah.
The right, the grand old party wants you to forget about slavery and racism so they can continue in propagating a racist state.
I don't know that Ben Carson is down for that. I don't know that.
I don't know if he personally is that far over, but I'm damn sure that the grand old party as a whole, as like a gestalt entity, is that.
Well, okay. As the gestalt entity, yeah.
Yes.
But I think definitely the individual people are not so brainwashed. They have proper motivations. They think they're doing the right thing. They have been properly brainwashed into that. That they are so set on their course that they think they're doing the right thing, they will just continue on doing it. I don't know how to show them the error of their ways, but time will do that for them. Speaking of time doing things for them, 19 Kids and Counting, the Duggars, well, they've run out of money. So now they're asking their fans for cash by creating a YouTube channel and becoming YouTube stars. Good luck. Good luck with that. Also, you may be an ambivert, not an introvert, not quite an extrovert. There's a lot of information out there on introverts and extroverts, but if you don't identify strongly as one or the other, it might be for a good reason. According to psychologist Adam Grant, 2/3 of people are ambiverts. Bum, bum, bum. Whatever that means. And you can go find out all of those links are in our show notes, our extensive freaking show notes, out at oreillyradio.com. And now, a word from one of our public service announcements.
Are you annoyed by misinformation spreading like crazy, and you want to stop the flood of nonsense coming from all directions? Go to Wikipedia, as do all those millions out there. Did you know there's an edit button on all Wikipedia articles? Why don't you go and hit that button to start making the world's largest online encyclopedia a more reliable source of information? If you're specifically interested in skeptical topics, come and join us at Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia, an international endeavor to change the world for the better, word by word. There are many ways you can contribute. You just need to start. You speak several languages, all the more reason to join us. We provide training and all the help you need. If you want to make a change, there's a nice community waiting for you out there. Contact us at gsowteam@gmail.com, visit our website, that's gorillaskeptics.com, or check out the Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia Facebook page.
And into some good news for a change, the government of Sri Lanka announced this week that Google's Project Loon will provide affordable high-speed internet coverage for the entire country, beaming from balloons floating in the atmosphere. Neither the Sri Lankan government or Google has set a concrete timetable, but Foreign Minister Mangala Samarawerra, I'm sure I got that, I nailed that one, made mention of the country being covered in a few months. The country of Sri Lanka covers 24,954 square miles with a population of a little more than 22 million. Loon's latest iteration is called the Nighthawk, a collaboration between the Loon team and aerospace designer Raven Aerostar. The Nighthawks will be outfitted with LTE antennas to send data to mobile phones and capable of transmissions from balloon to balloon and to telecommunication stations on the ground. The balloons are slated to stay in the air for about 100 days at a time and then be replaced.
Interesting.
They've been working on this for, I think almost 2 years. This is one of their moonshot projects over at Google to give the world internet.
Balloons.
Project Loon. Yeah.
I don't know if balloons are the answer, but, but satellite uplink technology has some problems, so.
It does, yeah. Well, if they blanket it with enough balloons, and these are rather high flying balloons.
Yeah.
So
high altitude.
Yeah, they're going to be way up there. You're probably not even going to see them.
Yeah.
You know, but unless you're near one of the tether stations, I'm sure that in poor weather, they're not going to fare very well.
Certainly possible. If they're high enough, they'll miss most of the stormy cloud layers, though.
Right, but their tethered cable won't.
Yeah.
So, though, I don't even know necessarily that they're tethered. I assume that they are. But I'd have to...
Because how would you stop them from moving around?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just do not know. I would...
That's why satellites, you know, that you put that thing into a geosynchronous orbit, it's going to stay there.
yeah. And there's a couple...
You can crunch the numbers on that.
There's a couple initiatives for that as well. That would be Elon Musk, our own Iron Man wannabe.
Yeah.
Would be, I should say. Or will be.
Elon Musk, the Tony Stark of our times.
That's right, he is. He's working on microsatellites to blanket the atmosphere, and, you know, it'd basically just be a continuous, you know, reamping of those, because they would be in low Earth orbit, and eventually their orbits would degrade and they'd become lots and lots of falling stars. They would probably, I'm not sure how long they would stay up, maybe a year and come back down.
The current communication satellites we use stay up for a good 10, 20 years at a time, don't they?
Yeah, but they're not in low Earth. They're much higher. Almost at Lagrange points, I think. So, I mean, they try to get them.
I don't think they're that high up. Lagrange points are fucking out there.
That's true, they are. Yeah. Well, maybe that's where they need to be, though.
Maybe.
But then you got clouds. And
given the ability to cover most of the planet.
Yeah. But then you got the clouds, so that's going to be a problem, too.
Yeah.
And latency. Oh, my God, the latency would be terrible.
Yeah, because even at light speed, talking about a Lagrange point, you're talking about, you know.
Several seconds. Yeah.
Comparable to the moon and back, which is, you know, there was a lag time to that transmission, so.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was.
It was, what was it, Ben? 4 seconds.
4 seconds.
Thank you, Ben.
Well, thank you very much, Jessica. Now, another option here would be Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg had announced the completion of Aquila, and that's Facebook's first full-scale aircraft designed to deliver wireless internet with lasers as part of their project with internet.org. Aquila is solar-powered, weighs less than a car, and has a wingspan of a Boeing 737. So these are supposed to basically be self-powered and just stay aloft. And with modern drone avionics, they could just be up there and just do their thing.
Yeah.
Loiter mode, as our drone pilots would call it. Just loiter over this country and provide it internet, would you? Thank you. So I might be with the Zuck on this one. I think that might be the better technology. Because then, oh no, the weather's terrible. Tell it to come back home. You know, just nice and easy, plug it back in, you know, get a good charge and send it right back up after the weather clears.
Zoom.
Yeah, you know, fix whatever's bad with it and, you know, then you're good to go. Now, the same thing with these balloons, you know, 100 days at a time, that's not a really long lead time. Same thing with the microsatellites and the same thing with this. These are technologies that can be rapidly changed. So as the technology gets better and better and better, they can get better every time they're deployed. And that's just going to make the world a faster place, at least faster for internet.
Yes.
And our communications, that is what shrinks the world.
Yes. True. Because we have not yet developed Ansible technology.
Ansible technology. Oh, my brain just farted on that one.
Perfect fast online communication.
Ah.
Again, they did a version of Ansible technology in Beyond Earth. That's why I'm thinking about it. I've been playing a lot of Beyond Earth lately.
I gotcha. Okay.
But
all
it
right.
Was the idea that you could use quantum entangled pairs to communicate across, you know, infinite distance.
Yes. Yes.
Instantaneously.
You know, I was I just read and I suppose this will be my pick. I just read Ernest Cline's new book, Armada. And there's some interesting tech in there. I don't want to give it away, but quantum entanglement is involved.
Entanglement is a big deal. It's just really hard to do.
It is. Yeah. Especially for what they want to do with it. Because it's so promising. So promising. Ugh. But no, we're not going to go into that. Anyway. So, into a break here. I did not get a chance to edit any of the wonderful logical fallacies that we've been presenting you, but I have one that I'm going to read. If you would like to provide us one, please go ahead, record yourself, go out to your logical fallacy is, and record as many as you like in roughly the format that you've heard previously. You know, go ahead, promote yourself, wherever you're doing, whatever you want to promote, that's up to you. This is your time to shine on the show. Then just go and pick your favorite logical fallacy, or your least favorite logical fallacy, as the case may be, and just rattle it off for us, and then just send that over to us at ohreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Today, it's Burden of Proof. You said that the burden of proof lies not with the person making the claim, but with someone else to disprove. The burden of proof lies with someone who is making a claim, and is not upon anyone else to disprove. The inability or disinclination to disprove a claim does not render that claim valid, nor give it any credence whatsoever. However, it is important to note that we can never be certain of anything, and so we must assign value to any claim based on the available evidence, and to dismiss something on the basis that it hasn't been proven beyond all doubt is also fallacious reasoning. Example, Bertrand declares that a teapot is, at this very moment, in orbit around the sun between the Earth and Mars, and that because no one can prove him wrong, his claim is therefore a valid one. And with that... Welcome to the bad. 911 dispatcher Matthew Sanchez with the Albuquerque Fire Department has been reassigned after hanging up on a frustrated caller attending to a dying gunshot victim. NBC News reported in a released audio recording, the dispatcher can be heard saying, "I'm not going to deal with this, okay?" in response to the caller's vulgar language before ending the phone call. 17-year-old Jaden Chavez Silver was later pronounced dead at the hospital. Now, they have they've taken the reports of this insubordinate action very seriously, which they should. And they have pulled the person off the desk. He's on administrative leave while they continue to deliberate what's going to happen. And I can only hope that sensitivity training of some type can be put into the mold here. Now, I know that many of you out there, I don't know about many, but I know a couple of you out there might actually be former or present 911 dispatchers or police dispatchers or fire dispatchers or just dispatchers at all. And with 911, I understand completely that it's going to be call after call after call of horror stories. Things that will make you cry. And you have to get through it. You have to help them. You have to figure out the best way to get help to that person, to get the right people to them, to just be there, to help, to do whatever is possible. And then sure, you're dealing with emotionally charged people. And I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of people, when they're emotionally charged, they say some vile things. And, well, yeah, maybe Mike. Yeah, we've
just a little bit. We got kind of the poster child for that, honestly.
At least for our show, yes.
Yes.
For our show, yes. So these things happen. As another fellow human being, I completely understand this and I empathize with that position, because your shift doesn't end with that one call. You don't take one call and go home. And there's not enough staff that if you've taken a really horrible, horrible thing on and you've had to deal with it, just like the person on the other end of the phone, you can't just like walk away for a minute. You have to then take the next call. So I'm sure that the person, this Matthew Sanchez, certainly did not mean for Jaden Chavez-Silver to expire based on his own negligence. Of course, that may not be the case either. That may be putting too much burden on him. He may simply have died anyway. And thankfully, in this report, he did dispatch help before he hung up. He just couldn't walk the person through any further care over the phone. Essentially, it was a tech support call for a dying person. You know, so any of you out there that have dealt with tech support of, no, left click, no, left, no, your other left, you know, that's frustrating enough, but now you're trying to tell somebody how to save the life in front of them. The stakes are way higher. So the frustration level has also got to be just that much higher. I mean, we hear about air traffic controllers being in stressful situations and, you know, having those high suicide rates, and dentists too, well, obviously for just looking at people's mouths and things like that. But in this case, a 911 dispatcher would certainly be in that running for having a very high stress job. And I do not envy that position. And my hat's off. I have the utmost respect for anyone that is their profession. That is their calling, because you make a difference. And if anything, this case shows you the kind of difference that you can make by simply staying on the line. If you don't, you'll never know if you could have saved that person, if you could have been the driving force that got that person to do the right thing, to put the pressure on the right wound to make sure they didn't bleed out, to provide the right rhythm to keep oxygen in their lungs, to keep their brain oxygenated so that they did not die. But without the proper instruction, without keeping a level head, without being able to go through it, what are we going to do? What are we going to do for the 911 dispatchers? I mean, this is a failing, certainly of the person, but is it not also indicative of the organization? Should they have shorter terms? Should you only, I think they don't have an 8-hour shift, I don't think. I think it's, yeah, I think it's smaller.
No, it's 8 hours.
It's 8 hours?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it should be less.
Well,
especially in areas that are particularly rough.
Well, yeah, but then you're going to run into the problem of people not getting paid enough and taking extra hours anyway. I mean, that is really neither here nor there. Any kind of hour crunch when it comes to a high-stress job, especially in this, I mean, you talked about hospitals earlier. A lot of hospital staff, because of the requirements and because they don't have the funding for full staffing to do what they really need to do. They have full staffing according to what bureaucrats think is full staffing, but they're the boots on the ground and they know what makes a difference and they know they need more people than they have.
Yeah.
That they can have because, you know, the powers that be won't let them. You know, they fudge their reports all the time so they could stay on call longer, so that they can get more done, because that's what needs to happen. So that's its own separate problem. And that is a problem that needs to be dealt with, but hopefully you know, as we start winning the wage war in this country, you know, that will be resolved to maybe not to everyone's satisfaction, but it'll be better than it was. In this case, yeah. While, yes, I understand this fellow's contradiction. He's doing a very difficult job. At the same time, you knew what you signed up for. You know what your job is. This isn't a tech support job where if someone starts swearing at you, you can hang up and it's company policy. You don't have to deal with that. This is different because the guy on the other line could be dying.
Yeah.
And you need to be there. You knew what this was. You volunteered for this. And yes, it's difficult to deal with. Dealing with any kind of life or death situation is not easy. That, not questioning that part.
Yeah, and it wasn't a choking victim. It was a gunshot victim.
But, and yeah, he was probably gonna die anyway. Because gunshot victims who don't get immediate attention, there's a reason that people want to outlaw guns. Because they're deadly.
Yeah, but it is a tool with a single purpose.
Yeah, that is still not the point of all of this. The point of all of this is you willfully, you didn't just give up. You told the guy on the other line, you're not worth listening to. You don't matter. That's unacceptable. If the story had come across that the dispatcher had froze, and he'd stayed on the line but not been able to say a single word, and, you know, there was an investigation into that, that I would have sympathy for. This was a guy making a conscious decision that, nope, I don't care about your life anymore. That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
I do have sympathy for the position you're in. But your choices, what you do with the situation you're in dictates how I'm going to judge you. And right now I judge you unworthy. I judge you unworthy of my sympathy because you didn't try. You didn't freeze up. You just said, I don't care anymore. And when you make the conscious decision to put yourself into that kind of role, that's the thing you want to do for a living, and people are depending on you, you don't get to make that call. You're scum. And you don't just deserve to be moved to a different job, you deserve to be fired.
Yeah. I have to assume, you know, through any logic, you know, maybe there's a union involved and, you know, that he'll just end up somewhere else. But this is such an insubordinate action. You know, it cost a life. It very well potentially cost a life. You know, that would be not probably admissible in a court. But yeah, you're fired.
Yeah.
You are no longer somebody that they can trust on the phone. You know, you've lost that trust.
Yeah.
Are any of your coworkers going to be cool with this? I can't think of that either. You know, you're going to be shunned. Just leave. Quit. Go away.
Yeah. Go away.
So, hopefully, this kind of thing, it gets enough traction that the 911 call centers around the country get a little bit more attention. And this enters their consciousness a little bit more. And just kind of refocuses them on the job that they're there to do. That they aren't just a tech support call. It means more. It means so much more. It means life and death. Most of the time. And that's why you're there. So, hopefully Matthew Sanchez lands on his feet in another job elsewhere, far away from people that he has to make life and death decisions over. And, yep. Our condolences, deeply heartfelt to the family of Jaden Chavez Silver. And with that.
Hi, Really Radio listeners. This is your host, Andy Cowan, calling my voicemail to make sure that it still works. Please consider calling us 6759. Bye.
All right, and now we are in the last section of the news. The Ugly. Samuel Dubois, or DuBose. Is it DuBose?
I don't know.
I like Dubois better, but I don't think it is. It's D-U-B-O-S-E. He is 43, and he was killed July 19th by a single shot to the head fired by University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing during a routine traffic stop in which DuBose was pulled over for not having a front license plate. This has made national headlines. There is body cam footage of the incident. It is highly graphic. I'm not going to subject you to the audio, because I think that if you really want to go find it, you certainly can. There is a link in the show notes. This is yet another in a very long line of police violence, uncalled for, police escalated violence in this country.
I think we've gone past violence at this point and moved on to brutality, because they say in crime scene examination, in criminal profiling, that a shot to the face usually suggests a deep hatred for the victim, wanting to literally erase what makes that person a person. And he didn't fire blindly. He aimed and shot to destroy the man's head. That's just...
Well, it seemed a little more frenetic than that, that there was a bit more going on. To read from the article out on The Guardian, a white police officer who gunned down an unarmed black man in Cincinnati, Ohio, has been indicted for murder by grand jury, as the county prosecutor described the shooting as, quote, the most asinine act, end quote, he had ever seen committed by a police officer. Tensing had maintained that he was dragged by DuBose's vehicle after the two entered into a physical altercation and was forced to shoot. But Hamilton County Prosecutor Joseph Dieters said body camera evidence completely contradicted this account. In a frank assessment of the officer's conduct, Dieters said Tensing had, quote, purposely killed, end quote, DuBose, and that he, quote, should never have been a police officer, end quote. DuBose's death is the latest in a string of high-profile killings of black Americans at the hands of U.S. police, and comes almost a year after the death of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, which prompted the widespread protests around the U.S. The incident also follows the police shooting of unarmed 50-year-old Walter Scott in South Carolina, where eyewitness video led to a murder charge against the officer responsible. Tensing's body camera footage shows a relatively calm exchange between the two, and there appears to be only a short altercation. In the recording, Tensing asked DuBois, a father of 10, ouch, for his driver's license a number of times, and inquires about a bottle on the car floor, which DuBois hands over. At one point, DuBois says, I have a license, you can run my name, after telling the officer he cannot find his card. I didn't even do nothing, DuBois later says, as the officer instructs him to take his seatbelt off. At this point, DuBois appears to pull the door shut and start the engine. Tensing appears to reach inside the car, and the car begins to roll slowly. Tensing then shouts stop twice, pulls his firearm, and shoots in through the open window. Dieters said the video showed that Tensing actually fell backwards after shooting DuBois, and that he was not dragged at all. Quote, it is our belief that he was not dragged. If you slow down this tape, you will see that happens. It is a very short period of time from when the car starts rolling to when a gun is out and he's shot in the head, Dieter says. Dubois was simply slowly rolling away. So, I mean, I could go on. I'm not going to read the whole thing. You can go out and take a look. But this is just a completely asinine, as was said, asinine act. And some people simply should not be police officers. I'm fully of that mindset. But I'm also not, I'm not a hiring manager. I don't get to figure out who gets to be a police officer and who gets to go where. And I know human nature. People have bad days. But people with bad days shouldn't have firearms.
Yeah, you don't get to have a bad day in this situation because you are armed and trying to kill someone. You don't get to have bad days.
Yeah, that if you feel like you got a bad day, you ought to stay home.
Yeah, that's the gig.
Yeah.
Again, you knew what you signed up for. Worst case scenario, this guy's just a power-hungry asshole who wants to lord it over people and didn't care about this man's life because he was black. Best case scenario, he was just a normal guy, relatively decent human being, because all of us are jerks sometimes. Relatively decent human being, just trying to get through his day, and he had a bad day. But even in the best case scenario here, a guy died. So there really are no excuses there. Something is very wrong in this system that this can even happen.
I'm a big fan of reasons, not excuses. Because nothing excuses an action. Not really. You can apologize for it, and someone can, excuse you out of the way, or, let you by, or something like that. So yeah, there are those kind of excuses. But no, there aren't any excuses for this kind of thing. There are reasons. There are things that piled up in people's natures and events that led right up to the event that explain the narrative of why. But there's no excuse. There is only why. So whenever I look at these stories, I dismiss the excuses and the platitudes that people will pull. And I just want to know, how did we get from A to B? Yeah. How did we get from you putting your pants on in the morning like everyone else, like the guy that died, the same way? How did you get from there, eating your Cheerios in the morning, having coffee, reading the paper, walking the dog, whatever, your normal everyday activities as a human being on this planet? How did you get from there to shooting another man in the face?
Man who wasn't doing anything.
No.
He said it himself. I haven't done anything wrong.
No, what he was doing at that very moment, at least from what it appears in the narrative that's given from the video footage, is he was scared that this guy was about to lose it because he was going to pull him out of the car. And with the current news that we've had, a black guy or woman being pulled out of a car by a white officer is not a good thing.
Yeah. We have just countless examples of why this is true. Again, I was on Tumblr today and a friend of mine posted, it was a post of just headlines from local news, because you're not going to see these things on national coverage because they're trying to suppress them. Local news stories of just cases like the few that have broken, like this guy, like Sandra Bland, who we've heard about, who supposedly killed herself in prison.
Right.
All those stories. Just, there's tons of them out there. This post was like 100 headlines long. And it was from like 2 weeks worth of news.
Oh yeah.
It was absurd.
This show could have just a torrent of these every week.
Yeah, we could do nothing but cover that and have more than enough material for the show.
But I don't wish to depress myself and every one of our listeners. In fact, we do have a viewer out there on YouTube. Hi! Thank you for joining us.
Hello, viewer.
Yes, we did have a couple more earlier, and as soon as we got into the nitty gritty, they bailed. So I'm not surprised. Yeah, it's just one of those things. I'm sorry, this is the show.
It's not surprising, though.
It's not surprising
because of the nature of the show and the headlines we cover.
Yeah, yeah, it's the nature of the show. So with that, I don't think we need to harp on this any further. Yet another death of a person of color by a person of non-color wearing a badge in this country, in this fine, fine country of ours. I really want this to stop. I don't want to have these stories anymore. You know, I don't think they're ever going to go away because, again, we have this institutionalized racism, and it's not something that's going to go away probably in our lifetimes.
Yeah, it's certainly not going to go away overnight. I think, I'm hopeful anyway, that we will see a significant decline in our lifetime, in my lifetime.
I would like to say that, yeah. And certainly it has gone down in the lifetimes of our grandparents, for instance.
Yes.
You know, desegregation for one. You know, yeah, the racism is still there, but at least the rights are there. And as you continue to increase the rights of a populace, it normalizes that. Well, and then there is that social pressure to accept it.
Once you have given freedom, you cannot take it back no matter how hard you try. The only way you can do it is by violence, and we're not putting up with that. It's obvious from watching the headlines, we're not putting up with your violence anymore.
No. Even though we could talk about our a couple GOP presidential candidates.
Oh, every week we're going to do that.
Willing to eliminate, you know, Planned Parenthood and roll back Roe v. Wade and roll back all these rights for all the people everywhere.
The point is, and we cover things like this, and we've seen these, just as long as we've been doing the show, we see these transformations happen, like this week with the thing about the pharmacies having to give out birth control. That big win is that you can take that step back. You can succeed because we've seen it happen. We know evil can succeed, but we also know that in this society with free flow of information and with the people getting the news faster than you can put a spin on it, that we're going to take it right back. And that's what's happening. It's like, yes, you can win in the short term. In the long term, the tidal wave of culture is going to win.
It is a cultural pressure. We are definitely in a cultural pressure. I was talking to my dad, my dear old dad, just over the last weekend. And, well, he is a product of his time. He is definitely a product of his time.
Oh, yes.
He's a Christian. He definitely has some racial biases. And he's not very fond of gay marriage and that gay relations. He was not very fond of even Mrs. Doubtfire with cross-dressing. He did not like that at all. You know, things, that's the level. And he said, I've lived too long. And I found that very poignant.
Yes.
I do not like to hear my father say such things because I do not think that he has lived too long. Certainly, I would like him to live much longer because, he's my daddy. So I want him around.
Yeah, but there is that. Having that self-awareness is good on the part of a person of that generation. I know someone similarly who is incredibly racist. Oh my God, he's so racist. He refers to black children as nigglets. That's how racist he is.
Oh, wow. I remember those words from the schoolyard.
He's so, so racist. But he realizes, because he's like 80 now, he realizes that the world has passed him by and that people don't think the way he does anymore.
Yeah.
He recognizes that he's just an ornery old bastard who can't change. And he just makes a joke of himself. Because he can recognize that even if he thinks it's wrong, that's not what other people think anymore.
It's good to have that kind of self-awareness.
Yeah.
To be able to criticize yourself. And even if you can't change, you can at least recognize your own faults.
And that everyone else has, you know?
Yeah. And then you don't force your own bigotries on those other people. You just kind of sit in the corner and are the crabby old man.
Yeah, you're just
or old woman. I don't want to be
scratchy old man in the corner.
Yeah, or woman. I don't want to be gender biased there. You know,
but I don't know about your experience, but my experience it's more so on the part of the males.
Well, it is because their patriarchy has fallen.
Yeah.
You know, that they have been more marginalized. Women have had more and more rights as time has gone on. So they're not as crabby about things because they have gained more rights, whereas men have been more equalized and, you know, they're less superior, which means bad things for them. You know, nobody likes having privileges taken away.
They're less superior that they've been brought down, which really everyone else has just been elevated to their position.
Right, but that removes their privilege.
Yeah.
And nobody likes having their privileges removed. It's like, I had the key to the executive washroom, and now everyone can go in there. Gosh darn it.
Well, suck it up.
Exactly. So, it's a thing. It's a thing. And as time marches on, it is the great equalizer. Culture, the culture that we have, has become it's so much better than just it was 10 years ago. We are very accepting now. And a lot of people would say that, you know, we've been Hollywoodized or whatever. You know, that's the kind of culture, you know, we're all supposed to be driving around Priuses and, you know, culturally and socially and environmentally conscious. And you know what? Yes, we are.
What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. That every time that someone says something like that, it's like, okay, so what's wrong with this, what's wrong with this picture? Why is it bad to be accepting and to, you know, to want to make the planet last longer and not, and to be less wasteful? And why are all of these things bad things?
Yeah. There's one of those memes
there's no compelling argument.
Yeah. There's one of those memes with the big, huge room auditorium filled with, you know, scientists and everybody. And up on the board, there's, you know, global warming and, you know, climate change, you know, the hoax or whatever. And somebody raises their hand and says, what if we go through all this and spend all this money and make the world a better place for nothing?
Right.
So wait a second. Even if we failed at the original mission, but we still made the world a better place. We still made the world a better place.
It's like what I was talking about earlier with the, you know, the big companies spending all that money on reducing carbon emissions. I don't care that they're not doing it for altruistic reasons.
Right.
They're still saving the planet.
And since we live here and keep all of our stuff here, that's a great idea.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, that I heard, just because this is, you know, the downer segment, I was listening to an interview with an author of a book that I'm currently reading. I'm reading Aurora by Kim Stanley Robinson, which is a great book, by the way. So far, so good. But his idea was, in researching leaving the planet, as our friend David, you know, longtime contributor to the show would say, I think we just lost Mike. Hopefully he'll pop right back. But I will continue on for the listeners. Oh, there you are.
Communications were temporarily interrupted.
You dropped off there, but that's okay.
I think I accidentally closed the window when I was trying to look at my bookshelf to find where I recognized Kim Stanley Robinson from. I have his Red Mars series.
Yes, there you go.
Yes.
So he's a sci-fi author, and his focus has been getting, you know, the, kind of that whole great wagon train into space, you know, leaving the planet, as David would say, getting off this rock. And he has come to an unfortunate conclusion in all of his research, because sci-fi writers do that, you know. They do a lot of research because they want the science to be...
Writers like him who do hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because his is hard sci-fi. There's nothing fanciful about it.
No, it's as real as it's going to get.
Yeah.
And he has come to the conclusion that unless somehow we transport everything from the planet, all of the microbiota, you know, every little bit and you know, magnetic wave and things like that, it may be very, 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 very nigh impossible for us to live off of this planet. Just let that sink in. We can't leave, if he's right. We cannot live in space. We cannot live in an orbital platform. We cannot even terraform another planet. We can't do these things. Technically, we can't do them right now. But even in the near future, when such technological marvels are possible, it still might not be a viable solution for the long term of our species. So this is our home, and we need to take care of it for future generations. Otherwise, we have doomed ourselves and everything else on this planet to extinction. Note, we are in the sixth major extinction event of the planet, already in progress, and we are certainly helping it along at an exponential pace.
I have to say, as much as I like the guy's writing, and I do love the guy's writing, as I said, I have his Red Mars series, mm-hmm. Red Mars, Green Mars, and Blue Mars, and I think they're fantastic, because he does a great – it's not just about the science of getting there. It's about the culture of what's going to happen when we get there, which is fascinating. I think his outcome is a little too bleak. I'm much more optimistic about it simply because knowing what we know mm-hmm. just on this planet of about life's propensity to occupy every environment it possibly can and adapt to changes and do so extremely successfully.
Yeah.
I see no reason why we can't adapt to another world.
I think maybe it's a matter of accepting.
Sure, we should bring along an ark with us. We should bring a gene vault. We should bring as much as we can to help us out. But I see no reason why we can't adapt to a new world.
I think it might be a matter of accepting that we will no longer be Terrans anymore.
Yes. That is an important again, I'm going to make another reference to Beyond Earth because the Civilization series of games has always been great for good historical knowledge, and you can learn a lot from it. Mm-hmm. And this one is great for, you know, speculative fiction of going to another world.
Yeah.
When you go to this other planet, a lot of the developments that people make, that your civilizations make, is about being no longer human. It's about being something else, some form of evolution. We're not on Earth anymore. This is a new environment, and we're changing to match that.
Yeah.
And if you go back to Earth, because one of the options for victory is going back to Earth, if you ever go back to Earth to pick up the humans, you're a different species now. You're not so different that you can't recognize each other and that you can't interbreed and produce viable offspring, but there was still going to be a fundamental difference in something that is – spent at least part of its time evolving on another world.
Yeah. It'd be the difference between Homo sapiens and Neanderthals.
Yeah. And we need to recognize that, and we need to be okay with that, which is one of the reasons that we need to push for all of these equality things on this planet so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are literally making up differences.
Yeah. We have to make...
To fight over.
We have to make these changes.
Yeah, and if we ever get out into the world, we are between two planets, humans are going to be actually, you know, measurably genetically different.
Yeah. Diverging evolutions. It will happen.
And we need to get okay with that real quick.
Well, maybe not real quick because evolution does take a long time. So, yeah, you know, generationally, I think that we would probably be okay. But yeah, As a species, we have to be okay with becoming another species. And there are so many, you know, the Flat Earth Society, if you will, that think that we are the pinnacle. We are the apex. That we have, that we were, not only did we not evolve, but we are not evolving anymore. Even if we did evolve to this stage, no, we're done. baloney.
And supposedly perfect. If we were perfect, how do we have so many flaws?
Oh, yeah.
How do we have so many defects? It's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, just take biology 101 and you'll figure out that we are not perfect.
How much of our genetic code is junk? Well, literally junk that doesn't code for anything.
Well,
it's a lot.
It's debatable. It's debatable as to what that junk is, because really our human DNA is only a small percentage. It's not even 50% of us.
I want to look this up right now. How much of our sequence is 98% of the human genome is non-coding.
Well, it's non-coding for human genes.
Exactly.
It is coding for other bacteria and biota. Yeah.
Yes, but just
that we carry around with us.
Separating that from it, separating the fact that we are, and this is another thing that you have to consider and you need to think about as a human being, that you are not a single organism. You are a portable ecosystem.
We are a collective.
We live in symbiosis with a lot of organisms.
Mm-hmm.
But just excluding that, not thinking about that part of it, how much of that genetic code do we just not use in our current form? How much of that is junk? How much of that can be cut away and make our system more efficient?
So far evolution has not been very effective at pruning the tree. There are certain species where pruning out that non-sequencing genetic code has happened at a very expeditious rate.
Yeah.
But most of the time, and this is why we can look at the genomes of other species on the planet and recognize common heritage. Because of all those non-coding sections. It's like, well, they were the same from here to here to here to here to here. You know, this has been happening forever. Yes. Yeah.
It's our genetic history and it's in ourselves.
Yeah.
But now imagine what could happen if we got rid of all that crap. If we were able to go down and, you know, after we have mastered the genome, because while we have mapped a lot of the human genome, I don't think we can say we've mastered it yet.
Well, we've mapped it, but we haven't mastered it, no.
But once we've gotten to that point, we can just take out the stuff that doesn't matter. And we can just take the genetic code down to its essential components, down to the stuff we actually use, and make that whole process efficient. How much healthier will we be? How many less mistakes will happen in transcription and coding and replication? How many, you know, diseases of, you know, essentially time and error? Because that's all cancer is error over time.
Yeah.
How many things like that will just go away?
Right. And many sequences.
That in and of itself would produce a new breed of human. We would no longer be Homo sapiens anymore. We would be something else. We would look phenotypically the same, but our insides would be completely different.
It would be. Time is the only thing that's going to be able to tell us about that one. And time is definitely one of those weird things with gene sequences as well, because a lot of that non-coding stuff, it's non-coding at a certain point in the life cycle. And then as you carry on, then it switches on because of life events or whatever happens. And then it does its thing. You know, if any woman that has ever had a child and given birth, they know how much their body changes. And that's just part of the genome. You know, you've been triggered and all of a sudden all of these things are going to happen and you end up being a slightly different person at the end. Some people more than others. This happens. But I think we've probably rambled on far enough from that. And, it's funny how we went from, a poorer person being shot in the face to talking, waxing poetically existential about editing the human genome and spaceflight away from this planet on ARC ships. I suppose you can only do that once in a blue moon. So, as far as entertainment reviews and nitpicks, I read recently Ernest Cline's Armada. That was fantastic. He also had written before that Ready Player One. And that book was read by Will Wheaton. This next one, Armada, was also read by Will Wheaton if you like the Audible versions, and I highly recommend both. I am also going through Kim Stanley Robinson's Aurora, which I heard about on one of the shows that he was giving a talk on. I think it was either Science Friday or I don't even remember. But I said, hey, that sounds interesting. I'll go ahead and pick that up. And so far it has been interesting. Apparently the narrative is driven largely by the computer on the ship. And I found that to be amusing. So, Michael, do you have any picks?
Actually, yes. I didn't have a pick when I started, and I was going to just pull something out of my butt. But since we were talking about cultural pressure earlier and sort of this unstoppable wave of change that's coming over society, whether the old farts like it or not, it's an oldie but a goodie.
Okay.
And because it's old, I think some people might not have picked it up because they're not into the so-called classics of literature. But I think, simply for one of its core concepts, people should pick up and read the Foundation series.
Oh, yes.
Because while arguments have been made that Isaac Asimov is a racist and that there are racist and sexist undertones, and because, again, he was a product of his time, and we need to remember that, he also had some really breakthrough ideas. Like the concept of psychohistory, the concept that by examining all of human history, not in what happened, but in the cultural changes, you could predict future cultural changes, assuming you had large enough masses of people. Sociology on a massive applied scale. And this is the concept we're talking about, that we've been talking about for the last couple episodes, about how, you know, culture is always going to be defined by the new and up-and-coming generation, because they're the ones out doing things.
Yeah.
And they are the ones who create the zeitgeist. And, you know, the more aware of it we become, the faster things are capable of changing. And that's, you know, what we're talking about with all this with freedom ringing and all of these great things that have happened recently. You know, this concept is worth examining further. And this is a very interesting perspective on that, written by a guy like 50 years ago. You know, so it's definitely worth reading.
Oh, as far ahead of his time.
Far ahead of his time.
Of course, Isaac Asimov, you know, he wrote, you know, the source material for that movie with, you know, Will Smith, iRobot, you know.
Yes.
You know, so if you liked the story, not necessarily that particular script, then, hey, you know, you ought to go back to the source material. I highly recommend anything that Isaac Asimov has ever written, along with Arthur C. Clarke,
mm-hmm.
you know, the writer of 2001 A Space Odyssey and many, many,
Robert
many
Heinlein's
more.
Robert Heinlein's another good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He did some good stuff.
So much sci-fi, so little time.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, our time is at an end. That's it for us tonight. We'll be back next Friday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or thereabouts. In the meantime, the conversations should continue on the web. Head over to orillyradio.com. That's orillyradio.com for all the links right there at the top of the page. And do watch us live and chat in the IRC if you can. I need to remember to actually crank that up next time. Anyway, if you've liked what we've done here, you can help keep the lights on. You can follow the Help Us link on the webpage right over there, and that'll take you to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/Cowen, C-O-W-E-N. That's me. And if that's too rich for you, we completely understand. But you could contribute to the show with other ways, in topic ideas, corrections, advertising officer, offers. I do that every time. I really do. Unclaimed lottery tickets, hate mail, and unsolicited advice by emailing us at ohreallyradiopodcast@gmail.com. And hey, how about leave us a voicemail, 470-222-6759. You can also post and vote on stories on our subreddit. Leave us a glowing review, please, on whatever platform you found us on. And of course, like the Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Tumblr, Google+, and subscribe to the YouTube channel where you can see our lovely visages and all of our reactions to the weird face-palming moments that we have. We can't thank you enough for spending some time with us tonight, and until next time, this has been O'Reilly Radio, part of the Cowen Services Network. Music was created by Kevin McLeod of comptech.com. Go over there, take a look. It's good stuff. Good night, everybody. The broadcast has been successfully terminated.
It's in the can.
Aye, laddie, it's in the can.